Mornings can start feeling the same. Wake up, brush teeth, go to work. But with breakfast from Wendy's, it's like, wake up, brush teeth, baconate with a breakfast baconator, roll with the sausage breakfast burrito, buddy it up with a honey buddy, or get seasoned with seasoned potatoes, and then go to work. Sorry. When you're ready for a fresh wake-up call, gotta be Wendy's.
At participating U.S. Wendy's during breakfast hours.
You're listening to Leaf Filter Radio, and the guru of gutter protection himself, Chris Counihan, is here to take your most pressing leaf-related questions.
Hey, everybody, Chris here. I understand we have Ron on the line. Ron, where are you calling from?
Uh-oh. Ron, are you calling from a ladder?
Well, I was. I wanted to ask Chris what I need to do to get my gutters ready to have leaf filter installed.
Oh, Ron, you don't have to do anything. A leaf filter trusted pro will come out and clean out your gutters, realign and seal your gutters, and install leaf filter, America's number one gutter protection system.
So I didn't need to get on this ladder?
Ron, leaf filter trusted pros are in your neighborhood and ready to help. Just visit leaffilter.com/day to schedule your free gutter inspection and get up to 30% off.
Thank goodness. What was that site?
That's leaffilter.com/day for your free gutter inspection today. See representative for warranty details. Promotion is 20% off plus a 10% senior or military discount. One discount per household. You're listening to Leaf Filter Radio, and the guru of gutter protection himself, Chris Counihan, is here to take your most pressing leaf-related questions.
Hey, everybody, Chris here. I understand we have Ron on the line. Ron, where are you calling from?
Uh-oh. Ron, are you calling from a ladder?
Well, I was. I wanted to ask Chris what I need to do to get my gutters ready to have leaf filter installed.
Oh, Ron, you don't have to do anything. A leaf filter trusted pro will come out and clean out your gutters, realign and seal your gutters, and install leaf filter, America's number one gutter protection system.
So I didn't need to get on this ladder?
Ron, leaf filter trusted pros are in your neighborhood and ready to help. Just visit leaffilter.com/day to schedule your free gutter inspection and get up to 30% off.
Thank goodness. What was that site?
That's leaffilter.com/day for your free gutter inspection today. See representative for warranty details. Promotion is 20% off plus a 10% senior or military discount. One discount per household.
This is Hidden Killers Week in Review.
A look back at the most prolific stories of the week.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Prepare to be angry. If your kid's in danger and the system shrugs, how far are you allowed to go before it's called murder? I think most of us who are parents know there is no limit to that. Someone harms your kid, someone takes your kid, someone's actively in the process of taking your child in their vehicle, speeding away. You're goddamn right, a bullet to the head of that person is not out of the question. It's encouraged, actually. Sought after, hoped for. Why? Because that would stop that person from abducting your child. And that person certainly deserves it at that point in time. Well, in the fine state of Arkansas, they'd like to challenge that. It's a question at the center of this case because Aaron Spencer didn't just react, he responded. He didn't just respond, he finished the job that the system, that law enforcement had failed to do because they already had this guy in custody. He's been charged with 43 counts of sexual abuse against this man's child, the dad who pulled the trigger. And dad had to actively cut off a moving vehicle and get his child out of that moving vehicle from said predator. Said predator ends up shot because of it, and now you're going to charge dad, Arkansas? I live in Arkansas, by the way. Now, if you missed the first part of this in our conversation with Eric, your 30-second catch-up on the case. Spencer's teenage daughter had been allegedly assaulted by a man named Michael Folzer. Folzer was facing 43 felony counts tied to that abuse. The court let him out on bond. Yeah. He was under that strict no contact order because we know anyone who has 43 counts of abuse towards a child is going to follow the no contact order. This piece of paper says you must stop doing the horrible things that you already knew were horrible, that you were already doing, but this piece of paper, this will stop you. You know what stopped him? Dad and a gun. And yet Spencer wakes up one night to find his daughter missing and soon finds her in Folzer's truck. He tries to stop the truck. It doesn't stop. He forces it off the road like movie style, confronts Folzer at gunpoint, and ends the threat right there on the side of the road, dead. Thank God. This man, he deserves a gold medal. But nope, now he's on trial. The state dropped the charge from first to second degree murder, signaling this wasn't about cold-blooded planning. It was about what happened in the moment, the heat, the urgency, the adrenaline. But even so, the law is asking a brutal question. Was it justified or was it vengeance? Today, we're flipping our focus to the defense. What will Spencer's legal team argue? What do they have to prove? And how much of this hinges on the daughter's testimony, those crucial few seconds, and what Spencer believed was happening as it unfolded? And there's no emotional, there's also a huge emotional layer here, because the case doesn't land in a vacuum. It lands in a country that's sick of watching predators get slaps on the wrist while victims disappear into trauma. This case taps into something primal, but primal doesn't always mean permissible. So joining me again is Eric Faddis, and this time we're in defense mode. Eric, if you're sitting in Spencer's chair, what are you leaning into? What's the strongest legal foundation to stand on when the jury already sees you as the dad who did what any parent might have done? I want to go on this because defending this guy is going to be very interesting if it does make it to trial at some point. He's a veteran, he's a father, and now to many an absolute hero. But here in the state of Arkansas, he's also a man now facing 40 years for murder. If you're representing him and you're defending Spencer, what would your primary legal defense be if you get out in front of that jury? Self-defense, defense of others, heat of passion? Why? I mean, what would you go with?
I think there are several options the defense can look at. So heat of passion is super strong here. You know, that's where a person has this irresistible impulse that they, because they found out some extremely troubling information and they act on it. I think that's very applicable, but it's not a complete defense. It would just lessen the class of the charge. However, there is defense of others. You know, if you thought your daughter was in imminently in harm's way of serious bodily injury, which can happen from an SA, then you can take a physical force and try to prevent that from happening. That's one defense. Another likely defense could be choice of evils, which is where there are two crimes that could be committed. One is your daughter gets SA'd upon again by the same perpetrator. The other is that, hey, if I don't stop this in a determinative fashion, that's going to happen. And so I picked the lesser of two evils there. I think all of those defenses are applicable. And I think based on the sort of moral issues in the case, a jury might be very receptive to those.
Well, and the thing is, look, the guy, the predator, picked her up in the middle of the night. He wasn't taking her out to Freddy's frozen custard for a hot fudge sundae. Of course he was out there to SA her again. That's the whole thing he was going to do. And God knows, maybe even kill her. Because that would shut her up. He's already facing these charges. The 43, he's out on bond. If you get the star witness gone, the victim, that seems like it might be a little motive to pick her up in the middle of the night. Arkansas law allows lethal force to prevent kidnapping or sexual assault. That's a statute. I'm not quite sure how it doesn't apply here or why the prosecutor's office doesn't think it applies here. I mean, the child, what, just because she wasn't actively being essayed at that moment in time, that isn't applicable? I mean, she was being kidnapped actively. Essay was next on the list. Thank God dad found him, her.
Yeah, no, I totally hear you. And I'm wondering if the prosecutors at this juncture, the case has been filed, they're not going to go back on that. But I'm wondering if they would consider extending some kind of very lenient plea offer, like something like a year in jail or even less potentially, to sort of save face and communicate to the community that, hey, you know, you can't be a vigilante, you can't take the law into your own hands, but this case has some very serious extenuating circumstances, and this is how we're going to handle it. You know, at this juncture, that's what I'd love to see them do. Will they have the cojones to do that? We got to wait and see.
Yeah. Is it cojones or is it lack thereof, I guess, is the question of doing the right thing and not wanting to be wrong. Because, again, that's like they file the charges. They're not going to, I mean, could the DA at this point, could they withdraw charges if they really wanted to? If they took a closer look at this, they got the public pressure, they got the scrutiny, they got their phone calls, they can't stop ringing and everybody's just going, what the hell are you doing? Could they say, we're going to drop this?
Certainly they could. You know, that happens not uncommonly, mm-hmm. even as you're getting close to trial, because the DA is getting more information as the case is proceeding. There's investigations that are ongoing. They could say, hey, look, after looking into this further, we actually don't believe there's a reasonable likelihood of conviction at trial, and we're going to dismiss. That's not uncommon. It happens in homicide cases and certainly an option the prosecutors have.
So in a case like this, is this where like just more public pressure needs to build? I mean, we're starting to see it get out there. We're talking about it now. A lot of others are starting to talk about it now. Is this where, okay, time to put the public pressure on and let's start making voices known in front of that courthouse, at that courthouse, to that courthouse, email, calls, everything, and anything to go, look, this is a really stupid move. Just back it up. Be the hero here and you're not going to be looked at with hate. And it's not about being looked at with hate. It's doing the wrong thing. This does not feel like something you should be able to prosecute at all. Does it come down? Is the reason that they're going after him more so because of the amount of shots that were taken here? I mean, he emptied his clip into the guy. I would do the same thing. And then he allegedly pistol whipped him as well. I would do the same thing. The guy would be found in parts along different places of Arkansas, Missouri, and surrounding states, I think, if it were my child. But that's not what happened. He did empty it. I get it. Is that the real thing? It's like you went too far. If you just did like one or two shots and took him out, eh. But you emptied and you reloaded. Is that where it gets a little tricky?
I think that's a part of it. So when we're talking about self-defense, the physical force that a person utilizes has to be proportional to the threat and only to the degree necessary to stop the threat. And so if you go into some overkill mode, there's a higher likelihood that you're going to be charged. On top of that, prosecutors could say something like, hey, this guy could have called 911. He had options that were options other than just unloading his clip in this guy. So I think that was probably a factor in the prosecutor's decision to ultimately bring the case.
I would think, I mean, another factor here in the defense of the father in this would certainly be somewhat of a PTSD defense as well. Obviously, the essay occurred to the daughter, but that is, I mean, that's going to be a traumatic stress on any parent as well. That's having to try and navigate a scenario where your child experienced this. How do you help them through that? What do you do? There's no booklet for that. So knowing this guy's free, and then daughter's not in her room, and you discover, oh, holy shit, he's actually with her. He came and got her. That's a big deal. That would be very triggering. And if you already have PTSD, which I think one would have as a parent, from having this happen to your child, the most important thing to you in the world. Yeah, that's a triggering event. That would be something that would certainly make one, you know, go to more of an extreme. Had this been the first time it happened, maybe it wouldn't have gone that far. I don't know, but there certainly was precedent here to know what this man's intent was with his daughter.
Certainly. And I think there are mental health avenues the defense should 100% explore. Now, this concept of like temporary insanity, that's really not a thing in most jurisdictions. However, there is not guilty by reason of insanity, which requires a mental disease or defect, which usually means any kind of legitimate psychological condition that stop the person from being able to make an intelligible, rational choice in the moment. You know, is there room to say, hey, the PTSD was so strong when we're talking about this gentleman's 14-year-old daughter and all the circumstances you mentioned that he literally could not control himself at that point. You know, evolution kicks in, instinct kicks in, and he had no voluntary control of his own faculties. I think it's something that the defense should at least explore and could have some effect on the prosecutors and how they view the case.
Do we know how this all initially started? How the 43 charges first came to be? How did he start communicating with her? Like, what was the genesis of this case?
You know, Tony, as you mentioned, that there is sort of limited public information about this case. But what appears clear is that, you know, there was this grown man and this 14-year-old. Communications started to happen. And then, you know, after that, he's charged with 43 crimes, much of which relates to essaying a 14-year-old girl. Yeah. And then, like you said, he gets bond, which is kind of perplexing in a case like this. He's out. They can't find him. They can't find the 14-year-old girl. Oh, it turns out they're together again, likely communicating to kind of arrange that. And so this was an ongoing campaign, allegedly, by this sexual predator on a 14-year-old that culminated in his death.
If this goes to court, I'm going to guess her testimony would be the most powerful here. If she confirms that this monster, Fossler, grabbed her and wouldn't let her go, essentially kidnapping her, which is what it seemed to be, would that make or break this case in terms of a jury finding innocence or guilt on dad stepping in and saving her life?
Talk about, you know, like reaching into the chest cavity of these jurors with testimony, that would be undeniable. I don't see how a normal human being wouldn't, you know, likely be in tears, so moved by the degree of trauma that this young girl allegedly experienced. And it just goes to show, you know, if that's what was happening to the daughter, what's going on in the dad's mind? And especially if they get a good number of parents, including dads, on that jury, they're going to watch that. They're going to envision their own children. And they're probably going to think to themselves, gosh, what would I have done? And if the answer is the same thing as defendant did, I think defendant's got a good shot at trial.
There's no clean landing for a case like this, no perfect ending, no line in the sand that doesn't get smudged by emotion, instinct, or hindsight. What Eric laid out there is exactly what or why Aaron Spencer's defense is both incredibly powerful and incredibly risky. On one hand, you've got a self-defense claim rooted in raw parental instinct. A father who didn't just fear for his daughter's safety. He'd already seen what the man had alleged to have done to her. That's not theoretical. That's lived trauma. That's memory on fire. And yeah, that's going to carry weight in front of a jury. But on the other hand, the defense has to walk a tightrope because this wasn't a split-second shooting during a home invasion. This was, I think, what I would call even worse. This was a pursuit, a confrontation, a reload. It charges or changes the texture of the case a little bit. It shifts from survival to control. At least that's what the state would like you to believe. And the prosecution's going to press hard on that angle. But is it truly a shift from survival to control? I would argue it's even stronger than survival. Because if you're a parent and you're fighting for your child, you've gone beyond your own survival. You're going for their survival. And if you're a parent and you understand that concept, guess what? That one outweighs this one. So I would argue he was fighting for survival even stronger than he'd fight for it with his own life, because at this point in time, his life didn't matter. He was willing to take the risk to put himself out there in front of this predator. He didn't know if the predator was armed. He didn't know what the predator was going to do. The predator had the gumption to go abduct his daughter in the middle of the night after already being charged 43 times and out on bond. Yeah. Bullets coming to you, dude. What didn't get fully unpacked today but deserves a spotlight is the larger message this case sends. If Spencer walks, is that a win for justice? or a green light for vigilantism. But was this vigilantism? It wasn't. He didn't go seek out this man and kill him in his home in the middle of the night. I would have, but this man didn't. This man took this guy having to abduct his kid again to go and kill him. And thank God he did. And if he's convicted, what's the message that every parent watching this play out gets? Don't defend your child or you might end up on trial yourself? Oh, there's plenty of horrible people out there who would take that one and go, that's not worth it to me. A good parent. They're going to kill him. The truth is, this case isn't operating in a vacuum. It's happening for a justice system that often feels tilted, too slow, too soft on people who do real harm. Spencer's actions may have crossed a line, but the public support suggests they believe the system crossed one first. And that's where the whole story gets dangerous, because when people lose faith in the courts, they stop waiting for permission. And when that happens, justice becomes something we do with our hands, not with our laws. Aaron Spencer's trial is still ahead, but the verdict, it's in a lot of people's minds, it's already in. That's what makes a moment so important and so volatile. Tell me what you think in the comments section on YouTube. If you're not already there, search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. If you're on our podcast platforms, wherever you get podcasts, do the same search, Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi, and you'll find us there as well. You can download and listen to all of our episodes on the go and vice versa. Video, audio, take us anywhere you'd like. And of course, please do leave your opinion in the comment section on YouTube. This is a hot case. This is one we're going to follow very closely. I'm already super angry, and it's only a short drive away from me, so I may be over there soon. Like me and attorney Bob Motta were talking about. Maybe make a little road trip. Anyway, tell me your thoughts in the comments. Until next time, for all of us here at the Hidden Killers Podcast and True Crime Today, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers Podcast.